Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 108 of Season 3 Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back, Todd.
Thank you. Spoiler alert here. Rob, only allowed me on the podcast because I threatened to call INS on him.
Comprende? Just watch your ass. All right, so Minute 108 begins with John getting sappier and ends with Thornburg threatening to vote Paulina. So yesterday's minute was a minute where John really was, you know, just bearing his soul, you know, letting his bleeding heart out. Well, along with his bleeding feet, I guess you can say. And
yes, bleeding hearts and bleeding feet.
That's right. And today we continue with the end of that, where John basically says, he started saying yesterday, I want you to tell her that. I want you to tell her that. John said he was sorry. Okay, you got that, man? And Al responds, yeah, I got it, John. But you can tell her that yourself. You just watch your ass and you'll make it out of there. You hear me? And, you know, I mean, I like the encouragement. I like the way that this movie takes these two characters and, you know, who have not met each other yet. Okay. And for anyone who's seen the movie, we know that they have like a minute together later on. That's about it. You know, it's not as if they're going to have that much screen time together throughout or whatever, but you know, they build such a great camaraderie between the two of them just via their conversations here, even though, you know, Al doesn't really know who John is. John knows that Al's a cop, you know, and after a while, Al finds out that John's a cop, but he doesn't know any information about the fact that he's a cop, you know, And the way that the two of them, the way that their conversations go is just great. You know, it's the type of conversation that you want to hear.
Yeah, well, I agree. I mean, you may have covered it on some other previous episodes, but, you know, the time I've been here, we haven't really talked about what a great character Al is. And, you know, just the dynamic between these two, the camaraderie. I mean, Al is one of the, I don't really want to call him a sidekick, but he's one of the great movie sidekicks of all time. He's the type of guy that you watch this and you go, you know, everybody needs an Al in their life. You know what I mean?
Do you have an Al in your life?
Oh yes, I would say that I do. I've, you know, probably spread out among a number of people, various friends, you know, my wife, I would probably consider an Al.
Just don't call her Al, you know.
I could actually, because that is her initials. Her first name is Amy, and since she married me, her last name starts with an L. So, you know, I could call her Al.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah.
I don't know your wife, but I don't think that'll fly. If you tell her, I want to call you Al because you're my Al of Die Hard, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, again, you know, we talked last time, you know, about moments that play into things we see later in the movie and such, and you know, just this scene and the way that Al, you know, responds to John, I think plays into what we see later on when they do finally meet, and you know, where they know each other just by looking at each other. You know, they don't have to say, you know, this is John, this is Al. They connect right away. And so, yeah, it's a great moment. Al is such a great, you know, listener, a great encourager. Yeah. Like I said, he's the type of guy we all need in our lives.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So he says to John, watch your ass. Okay. What do you think that phrase means?
Well, it means it's a variation on watch your back, basically, because watch your back was always to say, you know, like be aware, be tuned into what's happening, you know, that type of thing. And I think that that this version of that phrase is just kind of a, as we said last time, a more colorful version, yeah. shall we say.
Colorful metaphors. So it basically means, you know, be careful. You, the full phrase is mind your backs, keep your toes, and watch your ass. That's the full phrase that's usually that's used. So at this point, then John responds to Al by saying, well, I guess that's all up to the man upstairs. And I love the way that we can see the light bulb popping up above the head of John.
Yeah.
You know, he as he's saying that, he says, well, that's up to the man upstairs. And then he's looking up and going, wait a second.
Yeah. It's a great moment. And it's almost like, I mean, he's using the phrase the man upstairs, you know, as it's been used for ages there. And then at the same time, he's almost referring to Hans specifically there, because, you know, as we've just seen the last 2 minutes here, he's spilling his guts. He's not sure he's going to make it out alive. You know, it's almost like he's kind of saying, like, you know, what happens here is all up to that guy that I just tussled with a few minutes ago, the man upstairs, the guy I met upstairs. And then, you know, suddenly the light bulb goes off and he goes, oh, there's more to this plan than what I realized.
Right. It's true. So when do you think the first known use of the phrase man upstairs was?
The man upstairs. I have no idea, but I'm going to guess it might have been like in the context of a, like, I want to say something literary, like a book or something to God as the man upstairs.
It's literal. Yeah. It's from 1943. Okay. And it's the original phrase was, as luck, fate, or the man upstairs would have it, the storm subsides by morning. You know, that's the, I mean, obviously, you know, not getting into bouts of religion or things like, or faith and things like that. But, you know, basically they're talking about God, but I love the way that basically John now makes a correlation between Hans and God from the perspective that, okay, mm-hmm. Hans is the guy who's, you know, arranging everything from upstairs, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
You know, he's not saying that Hans is God, but what he's saying is that Hans is, you know, manipulating. I don't know if he's that's a bad word to use in this.
Yeah, no. He's the one in control of the situation right now.
Yes. Yeah. He's the one making the situation as it is and things like that.
Absolutely.
I think that works really well for them to make that type of correlation here. You know, and it also works as, you know, the double meaning of, okay, the man upstairs is God. But wait a second, the man upstairs here was Hans. So, you know, he can think about that. And at this point, Al seems to think that he's lost John, because John is deep in thought, trying to figure this whole thing out. And he goes, John. You know, and then John verbally says out loud, what the f*** were you doing upstairs, Hans? You know, and like, he doesn't say it into the radio. He's saying it to us, basically, because at this point, he's basically telling the audience what he's thinking.
Yeah, well, he's talking his way through it, which is something we've seen him do throughout the film. You know, like, there's the moment where he's kind of beating himself up for not stepping in when Takagi was at risk. Says, why didn't you do something, John? He says, because you'd be dead too.
Right, he gives himself the answers.
Thinking out loud. So, right. So this is something he does throughout the film. He's a think out loud type of guy.
Right, but I think it's more for us. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, from a script writing standpoint, having a character think out loud is totally to give the audience information.
Yes. Completely. And it works. He definitely is able to give us enough information when he does that. You know, and then Al says, John. And he goes, no, Al, listen, just lay off for a while. I got to check on something. And you can see the confusion on Al's face when he says that to him. So it's a nice way for them to, to end this scene, this conversation between the two of them. I mean, it starts off, it starts off with John opening his heart and moving it, and it gets sappier and sappier and sappier. And then, one phrase during this conversation just completely changes the direction of things.
Yeah, it snaps him back. He's been, like you said, he's kind of been losing hope through this moment of spilling his guts, and then he says something that just triggers him back into
Right. Like,
policeman
what were
mode,
you
so to
doing
speak.
here? Why were you up here? You shouldn't have been up here. Also, John doesn't necessarily know that Hans doesn't have any, he doesn't have as many minions to help him here. So, John knows he's taken out a few, but still, he doesn't know the exact number. He's always guessing at the number of terrorists slash thieves. Do you know how many there are? Did you count?
Didn't they say 12 at one point? But I don't know if that
Okay,
was
so
accurate.
they do say 12.
Because Al says something, or somebody, Al says something about, he's the reason that you're dealing with the eight terrorists instead of
Yes,
12 or
he does
something
say
like that.
that phrase, and there's numerous times throughout the movie that they refer to them as 12, but if you count them, you get 13. So
Ah,
again, it's a baker's
okay.
dozen, not
Well,
dozen.
you put Al Leong is in his own category, so you don't lump him in with everybody
Okay,
else.
that's
That's the
great.
way that
Because
works.
he's the chocolate-eating man.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And then we see Al's confusion by this comment and trying to figure out what John's really talking about. But I guess he says to himself, "All right, this guy's a seasoned, cop. He's a badge. He's a seasoned badge. So therefore, he's gonna let him have his little bit of time to think things through." And then the scene changes, and we're back to our good friend Thornburg. That's
William
great.
Atherton, man. What one of the great, I mean, we talked about the word jerk last time. One of the great
That's
jerks
right.
of 80s
I
movies,
actually just
William
rewatched
Atherton.
one
I
of
mean,
your
Mr.
favorite movies from '84 that features Atherton. I saw Ghostbusters just the other day again. So.
Ghostbusters, yeah. Between this movie, Ghostbusters, and Real Genius, he solidified himself as one of
Yeah,
the
but
all-time great 80s
do you
jerks.
think he's better than Dwayne Dean Robinson?
Who's the bigger jerk? Oh, because, well, good point, because you've got another great 80s jerk in this movie, because he's the principal or the
He's the
teacher in the Breakfast
vice
Club.
principal.
Oh, jeez. That is one of the toughest questions
Wow,
I
so
think
there
you've
you go.
ever posed to me, Rob.
Paul Gleason or
Who is
William
a bigger
Atherton?
jerk? Paul Gleason or William Atherton? Oh, I think I'm gonna go with Atherton just because Ghostbusters. I mean, in Ghostbusters, he's off the charts, so
Okay,
yeah.
I mean, I gotta say,
I mean, I think Dwayne is he's m almost more inept than a jerk in this
you're saying
movie. You know what I mean?
Atherton is doing it on
He is a
purpose.
jerk.
He's being a jerk on purpose, and Paul
Yes,
Gleason is
yes.
just stupid. Okay, all right, that's fair.
Yes. I
Okay,
think
that's
I'm going to
fair.
go
See,
with that
when I
argument.
rewatched Ghostbusters the other day, so I was paying a lot of attention to William Atherton's character, and his character there is so one-dimensional. It's just, it actually, I think, hurts the movie that they didn't develop him a little bit better. I think he would
Well,
have been a better jerk.
the original screenplay for Ghostbusters was like epically
Yes.
long. Dan Aykroyd's original version had like, it would have been like a 6 hour long movie type of thing. So maybe that's in what we lost in when they
Have
pared it down.
you ever read that? Have you ever read it?
The full screenplay? Oh no, I don't know if it's even out there. Is it out there?
I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know until you just mentioned right now that there was a
Yeah. No, I
six-hour
mean, my
version of the
understanding of
screenplay.
that whole thing was that, I want to say it was one of the first times Aykroyd had really done like a movie screenplay. So he didn't even have a context for how long it should be type of a thing. And he had this epic thing. And I want to say Ivan Reitman was like, well, you've got some good stuff here, but it needs to be more manageable. And that's kind of where Harold Ramis came in more. And I think he helped bring it down to what we have today. But
right.
Anyway,
but again, we could have had Belushi in there, and we could add Eddie Murphy,
It's another one that I mean, sure, I'm sure other folks have done it by the minute, but yeah, the day you're up for Ghostbusters, I'm there, buddy.
No, it's already been done. Die Hard's been done also, but the reason I redid Die Hard is because I'm going to do the whole series. So that is the plan. So you can't start a series at number two. And, they only did number one. Number one was, remember last year you and I were on the group Movies by Minute project from 2022, where we did Silverado together.
Right.
So Die Hard was the very first group project 5 years ago.
Okay. Okay.
But which I wasn't part of the community back then, so I didn't do it. So, but if you're interested, Bubba Wheat every week does a comparison between my episodes and those episodes, and
interesting,
and chooses which one he thinks is more interesting. So there are weeks I'm happier with Bubba than others, but
All right, so now we know if there's any falling out between Movie Rob and Bubba Wheat.
No, there won't be falling out. Bubba Wheat just doesn't like that I spent like 20 minutes of our episode last season talking about the Amish people, just because we saw a horse and buggy, But whatever. Sorry, Bubba. I know you don't like it, so that's fine. You can listen. You're always welcome back if you want.
One of the best sights I ever saw in my life that I just gave me a wonderful chuckle was when I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which of course is Amish country. And I went out to eat, and I pulled into the parking lot of a Fuddruckers, and there was a horse and buggy parked there. So
there you go.
Apparently the Amish do Fuddruckers.
Apparently. I was actually in Lancaster County. I drove through Lancaster County 2 months ago when I was in the States. So yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. For some reason, when I was going from Baltimore to New Jersey, it took me all through Pennsylvania because I didn't want to pay toll, which was fine. I didn't mind. It was fun. And I got to see all of these biblical named cities. I even saw the same name of the city that I live in. I saw it in Pennsylvania, and I was just, I was shocked. Uh-huh. It's the. Well, I mean, I don't know how you know your. I don't know how well you know your Bible, but it's. I live in the city called Ephrata, which is it's in the Book of Ruth. It's mentioned in the Book of Ruth.
Yes.
So, yeah. When I was driving through Pennsylvania, I saw Ephrata, Pennsylvania, and I'm like, whoa, holy crap! I'd never thought about that before.
I think you see some similar things in Utah as well, because of course the Mormons settled Utah. So you see a lot of biblical names there as well.
Right.
We've totally tanked this episode now on Bubba Wheat's scale by talking about the Amish, for this long.
There you go.
So
now we're not even close to getting into too deep there. So we're good. We're good. So we're back to talking about William Atherton.
Oh, Thornburg. Yeah, that guy.
Thornburg. So he looks and he looks at Paulina. Now, Paulina's in her robe. Again, this is like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. He's knocked on the door. It already says something about his personality that he's willing to bother people at this hour in order to get his scoop.
You know, it's Christmas Eve, or by this point, maybe even early Christmas morning. He should have dressed up as Santa Claus and come to the door.
Meaning they would have given him cookies and milk.
They would have given him cookies and milk, and then they might have just let him in. He wouldn't have had to threaten to have INS called and all that. He could have just been, hey, it's me, jolly old Saint Nick with my news crew. We're here to see, what's her name?
Lucy.
Lucy and
John Jr.
The son's name is.
John Jr.
Yeah.
Jack, as we find out, from
Mary Elizabeth.
That's right. As we find out in Die Hard 5, his name is Jack. They don't call him John anymore. So he says, 1 minute. That's all I'm asking. And she responds in Spanish, which I don't understand Spanish. So I don't know what she says. And then he goes, 1 minute, just to speak to you. All right. get back. He pushes back his cameraman and stuff like that. And he goes, back off.
Like they're the aggressors exactly. in all this. Yeah.
Back off. All right. All right. And he says, look, you let me in right now or I call the INS. Comprende? So he's really showing how much of a jerk he is with this. That is not something that you do at this hour. You know, just you don't do it any hour, but this hour in particular. You know, he's, you know, she's actually stupid. She answered the door. Yeah.
I know. I mean, you know, not only do you not answer the door at midnight or whatever, but I mean, it's Los Angeles, folks. I mean, you know, don't try to pretend that it's not a high crime.
Well, that goes back to what you said. Maybe she thought it was Santa.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, you know,
there you go.
It's Tim Allen there at the door.
That's right. There you go. Now, do you know what the INS is?
This one I know. It's the Immigration and Naturalization Services, I think. Sir, is that the
services? Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Yes.
Of course, you I was thinking, correct. Watching this today, they probably would have. They would have said, "I'm calling ICE instead of I'm calling INS," just because.
Well, because they changed the name.
Yeah.
The INS was only around for a total of 89 years, from 1933 till 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's part of the U.S. Department of Labor. Well, actually, it started off as part of the Department of Labor from 33 to 40, and then from 40 to 2003, it was part of the Department of Justice. And then they changed the name to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, followed by the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is ICE, as you said. First, it was USCIS, then ICE, and then U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Sorry, it was transferred into all three of these. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So you have... The first one is U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, U.S. Immigration and Customs Service Enforcement, ICE, ICE, and U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, which are all part of the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they make sure that people are doing the right thing. So the mission of the INS is they administered federal immigration laws and regulations, including the Immigration and Nationality Act. Its officers inspected foreigners arriving at the official port of entry, detecting and deterring illegal entry between the ports with the assistance of the Border Patrol, which is a component of the INS, and by sea, and conducting investigations of criminals and administrative violations of the act. The INS also adjudicated applications for permanent residency, green cards, change of status, naturalization, the process with which an alien foreign-born person becomes a citizen, and similar matters. Okay, after the Civil War, there were states that were starting to pass their own immigration laws, which prompted the Supreme Court in 1876 to rule that immigration is only something that the federal government can deal with, and it's not something in the states can do.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1891, they had the Immigration Act, which established an office of the Superintendent of Immigration, which was part of the Treasury Department. And this office was responsible for admitting, rejecting, and processing all immigrants seeking admission to the United States and for implementing national immigration policy. So in other words, those are all the people that used to, you know, we'd see in movies, you know, working in the Statue of Liberty on Ellis Island.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, I know that my grandfather showed up. I actually found the manifest where my great-grandfather came into the U.S. And then I found the manifest where my great-grandmother came 2 years later with their two kids, which
excellent.
To me is just baffling. That back to the, you know, the 120 years ago, because it was in 1901. I think he came in 1901 and she came in 1903, or maybe, I don't remember the exact years. It was like a 2 year gap between mm-hmm. the two of them and stuff like. And to me, it just baffles, you know, that married couples would be able to separate for so long in order, you know, to raise the money to bring the other one over.
Yeah,
you know, that type of thing. So yeah, I mean, you can go onto the Ellis Island website and search for names and find when people came in, and they'll tell you like the name of the ship and all that stuff. It's really, really cool information.
I know my wife, she loves digging into that kind of stuff. And, you know, there's like various sites where they like, you know, people volunteer and, you know, try to decipher, you know, some of the scribbled writing that's on those documents and things. And, you know, she's helped out with things like that before. So, yeah, it's cool stuff. I mean, it's just, it's wild to think that, you know, we have some of those records that were, like we say, scribbled on paper, you know, long before we had computers to keep track of all this stuff. And it still exists.
Yeah. And the fact that someone actually spends the time now, you know, doing the data transfer, you know, hand by hand, you know, by hand of putting all that information into their system is also very cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's pretty much how this minute ends. So comprende?
I do comprende. Yes.
Comprende means understand, right?
I believe Spanish that's the way, that's the way I've always interpreted it. But, I always say the extent of what I know in Spanish is what they taught me on Sesame Street. Uno, dos, tres, okay. That whole thing, you know.
that makes sense.
You'd think that I'd know more living in Denver, because we do have a pretty high you know, percentage of Spanish speakers here in our region. But nope, I don't know it very well, I'm afraid.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to say before we get into the script?
No, let's go for it.
All right. So the script does have a few minor changes here. So McClane says, you know, Powell says to McClane, just watch your ass and you'll make it. So McClane goes, I hope so. But that's up to the guy upstairs. Pause, struck by a thought, upstairs, thinking to himself, Hans, you bastard, what were you doing? So it's interesting that in the script it's toned down. You know, I wonder if that was an ad lib by Bruce Willis to change that, or, you know, McTiernan told him, you know, no, you got to swear, you know, like looking back to the future, swear, George.
Yes.
Do you really think I should swear like that? Hey, you, get your damn hands off of her. Do you really think I should swear like that? Yes, George, swear, goddammit, swear. And then Powell goes, Roy? So I like the fact that in the script, we've mentioned this a few times, he keeps calling him Roy instead of John, even though he knows his name is John.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then McClane goes, stand by, Powell. I got to check something out. He moves towards the door, limping hurriedly out of the room. And then it says they cut to Holly's front door. Thornburg's got one foot literally in the doorway. But since Polina still has the chain on, it's not quite enough. So, you know, in the movie,
there's no chain she's outside. In the movie. Yeah.
She's outside. And then she says, I'm sorry. Mrs. Holly says I couldn't let strangers in. Strangers? I'm with KFLW-TV. That's affiliated with the FCC. And I'm sure you know that's the United States government, just like the INS. And then it says, as she wavers. So it's fun that they do it that way.
That's an interesting change, because I think the way they do it in the movie, you know, again, just solidifies, you know, Atherton as being a jerk. You know,
yes.
The way it's written in the script, there is a little more playful, which, you know.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Alan Rickman performances. So what have you got for us, Todd?
All right. This was a tough one, too.
I wouldn't give it to you as an assignment. Come on.
I realized looking at that there's definitely some that I haven't seen in Rickman's filmography. And there's also a large percentage of movies that are all devoted to one character.
You should only pick one of those.
I would. Yeah. Well, so number five, I actually went with a voice performance and picked The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because I love what he brings to the character of Marvin in that. For four, I did go with my Harry Potter one, and because they all kind of blur together for me and I haven't seen them in a while, I just picked the first one, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Mainly because I do think Rickman is very strong in that and how he establishes the character of Snape. You know, there might be some, you know, some intricacies and nuances that, you know, in the other films, but again, they're not terribly fresh in my mind at the moment. So I just went with the first one.
Okay, that's fair.
Three, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. the film that really introduced Rickman to me and a lot of other folks. Great villain performance.
Really? You didn't see him in this one first?
No, no. Oh, wait, no, let me think about that. No, you're right. You're right. I did see him in this one first. I don't know why my brain just farted like that. Anyway, because this is the because Robin Hood, he got after this. He was established in this, and then that was the first big
one. This was actually his very first film performance.
No, you're right. I confused the order there for a second. Anyway, number two, Galaxy Quest. I mean, by Grab Thar's hammer. Oh, it's so fantastic. And then number one, of course, is Die Hard. Yeah, without question.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for that, Todd. So why don't you tell people once again where they can find Todd Liebenow?
So the blog is Forgotten Films. It's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. The podcast is the Forgotten Filmcast. Just search for that wherever you find your podcasts. And then follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!